It's a breezy July day. Samantha Oliver and her research assistant, Andy Minch, are surveying the scene at a lake nestled off Oneida County Highway D. Oliver says, according to a neighbor, this lake wasn't even here last year, but reappeared in the wet weather.
And that's what we're finding a lot this year, is that the area has been under a pretty severe drought for the past decade or so, and now it's been a really wet season, so all these kind of ephemeral systems are coming back. So a lot of them look like this.
Like this is small and oddly shaped, about the size of a football field, and ringed by maples and black spruces.
And it looks like the water is maybe a couple feet deep at the most, and there's sort of an island in the middle of either grass or sedge growing.
The lakes that Oliver studies aren't boating destinations or even of much interest to most scientists. But she says even though small lakes are, well, small, there are a lot of them. So taken together, these lakes make up a big percentage of the water system.
Small lakes outnumber large lakes by orders of magnitude. So there are a lot more small lakes in the region than, say, your typical trout lake that's big and clear and has lots of nice fish in it. Those lakes are great, but these small ecosystems are serving a completely different function in the landscape, and there are a heck of a lot of them.
And they're not very well studied, so Oliver says it's hard to know what's really going on in them. She explains that small lakes like this one respond more quickly to changes in the environment, so they can serve as the equivalent to canaries in the coal mine.
Look at this lake right here. There's not a lot of water compared to its adjacent terrestrial system. And so if something changes, the lake will change because there's simply not a lot of water there. These small systems are sort of good indicator systems of what might be going on in the region.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Oliver and Minch hoist their canoe off their silver Ford Escape and carry it down to the water. Oliver says they never know what to expect when they first arrive at a new lake. They pick their sites based off satellite data, but that can be inaccurate, directing them to a lake that's not actually there, or to one that might be inaccessible, miles from the nearest road.
And some days are really disappointing because you'll visit five lakes and you can't get to a single one of them. And so you've spent a day and you don't have anything to show for it. And that's really disappointing.
Fortunately, today's entry is pretty easy, and they only have to carry the canoe a few feet. Oliver pushes off in a slightly wobbly canoe with two backpacks full of gear. As dragonflies swoop by, Oliver begins with a measurement of tiny organisms called zooplankton, using a net that looks like a wizard's hat.
So I'm going to do a zooplankton toe. And this little device on the bottom just closes.
She takes some other basic measurements and then comes water filtering to measure the amount of chlorophyll and other particles in the water. This is the slowest part of the data collection. Sometimes it takes more than an hour. Today the filtering device is malfunctioning a little and its motor starts to sound ironically like a ticking clock. Meanwhile, the dragonflies get bold and land on the canoe.
This is what most of the job entails. Watching water flow through a filter.
The grind of data collection in small, insignificant lakes adds up to something Oliver hopes will be significant. She'll spend this winter analyzing data from the 50 lakes she'll survey this summer. And her project is part of a larger effort to create a database based on samples from over 8,000 lakes in the Midwest and Northeast. And Oliver says for this project, one surprising source of data has been private landowners.
I would say 75% of our lakes are on private land, and so much more interaction with the public than I thought originally. If it were mostly on public land, you wouldn't get all of these interesting details like, oh yeah, there are definitely fish in that lake. I've fished that lake for 20 years, or that lake hasn't been there for 10 years, and it just showed up this year.
Asking landowners for permission, searching for tiny lakes that might not even exist. Oliver says all these unknowns can be challenging, but also make the project special.
When you're hiking through the forest and you know you're headed towards a lake, and then the forest kind of parts and there's the water body, and you just have this overwhelming sense that you're the only person that's ever seen that water body or been on that water or taken a water sample.
Those are the moments, she says, make it worth it. And then there's that bigger picture to keep in mind.
No, it's not about visiting every one of these little systems, that will never happen. It's just understanding the diversity of those systems that are out there.
And that understanding comes one zooplankton toe, one small lake at a time. For WXBR News, I'm Natalie Jablonski.